More of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. There is a review of Jess Walter's latest book that describes the author as, quote, a big-hearted man who excels at writing about other big-hearted, if broken, men. Walter would plead guilty as charged. The review is actually of his latest short story collection, but it could easily apply to his most recent novel as well. Beautiful Ruins is just out in paperback and is filled with flawed characters who themselves are filled with humanity. The book brings together divergent characters, storylines, and even eras from World War II Italy to modern-day Hollywood. The tale is woven together convincingly and with much good humor. We'll hear Jess Walter read a bit from it later, but he joins us now to share his own story. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thanks, Mitch.
How would you describe the kind of characters that you're most drawn to, either the ones you most like to read about or the ones you most like to create?
I think I'm probably more drawn to flawed characters than I often have people say, why are your characters so troubled? And they seem perfectly normal to me. So, but I think, like a lot of authors, I like to sort of work out existential questions and philosophical questions and psychological questions through the characters. So often they're troubled by things that work their way into the narrative.
They're troubled, but they're not. Sort of outrageously troubled. These are kind of normal, flawed people.
Yeah, and I think I have a fondness for my characters, too. I root for underdogs. I come from a small town and a very blue-collar background, and so I like people who rise to challenges. To me, a father who, is homeless and has to beg for money to buy his son in foster care a present is more interesting than, a wealthy lawyer who comes home from the golf course and finds out his son has gotten into Yale. I'll just always be drawn to those harder cases, probably.
Well, and it's funny because we might think of the latter case, the father who comes back home,
right,
after
the
lawyer father, or whatever, is as being kind of the larger character. But the larger than life people are the ones who you really kind of get into.
Yeah, I like people who face all sorts of challenges. And in Beautiful Ruins, for instance, I think a lot of the challenges are created by the characters themselves, by their own appetites and their ambitions and their dreams. And those kind of characters really inspire me. But also, just coming from the background I do, I'm really inspired by people who have economic hardship, who don't have the advantages that some other characters do.
There are any number of big-hearted and or broken characters in the book, some beautiful ruins, you will. When you go back to the beginning of the process, what was the ruin that first got lodged in your head? Or do you even work that way?
I really don't work that way. For me, fiction is a series of holes that kind of open up. I start digging around. And the very first image I had is the image that starts the book, which is a woman arriving in this Italian village that you can only reach by boat. And for a couple of years, I didn't know who these people were. I just knew that she was beautiful and he was smitten. And those characters, Dee Murray, an actress who's been exiled from the set of the film Cleopatra, and Pasquale Tursi, this Italian innkeeper, were the real constants for the book. Finding out who those people are, you dig and dig, and the more you get to know them, you realize the sort of question that their lives pose. And the novel ventures over a bunch of different characters. It has real breadth as you meet all these people who connect to their lives in certain ways. But at the heart of it was always those two people, Pasquale and Dee, and their and the idea that the moment where they met would be so powerful for both of them that it would define their lives.
It's fortunate you were a fiction writer, because that could easily have been the setup for a perfume commercial.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't. It was, I was always interested in the difference between the vision of the life that you imagine, the dream, and the life that you end up living. There's a moment where Pasquale realizes that his life now will always be two lives, the one that he leads and the one that he doesn't. And those roads not taken, the idea of regret. And when the title Beautiful Ruins hit me, I realized that there was a sort of dignity and power and honor to the life that you choose, even if it isn't the dream that you imagined in the beginning. And that's what I was really writing toward.
Well, and regret really underlies almost everyone in this book.
I think it underlies everyone in life. You know, I don't, you know, I'm not playing in the NBA as I had hoped when I was 9 years old. So, yeah, I think for a lot of us, coming to terms with the sacrifices we make, the decisions we make. And you know, I think I started this book in 1997, and I lost a parent and had a couple of children and had one move out of the house. And you experience that much sort of life and heartache and also the sort of everyday triumph. And that's what I wanted the characters to sort of experience. And so I think this book probably has more breadth and more of a longer tale than most of the books I've written, because that's what the characters experience.
This might be one of those things that that I may just be ascribing more significance to it than anything, but there is something almost poetic in so much regret playing out in places that are so sun-drenched and so physically beautiful. A lot of this book takes place in the seaside village in Italy. Some of it takes place in California. These are places where externally everything kind of goes with a veneer of beauty.
Yeah, no, I think that's perceptive. There, it's very much, you know, the settings of had a sort of romanticism that I wanted to explore, even though I think of myself as a kind of anti-romantic in a way. And the book is very much about our romantic ideal of the places and the people. So it begins in this village, Porto Vergogna, in the part of Italy called the Cinque Terre, the Five Lands, that is these villages etched into the cliffs, these fishing village that I invented. And then it moves to Hollywood, you know, another a place that connects, of course, with dreams, because it's where they all go. And it moves to Edinburgh, Scotland, and, you know, a mountain resort in North Idaho, and it really sort of hopscotches the world.
You kind of alluded to this, you know, as I read the book. One of the issues that stuck with me is that the characters who populate it, you have an innkeeper in this tiny village. You have sort of a failed writer from Wisconsin,
right.
Actually.
Yeah, right.
A film producer, a movie mogul, a would-be screenwriter, a 1960s movie star, and a struggling rock musician. It is no small accomplishment that you were able to weave their lives together.
Yeah. Again, it's sometimes when I'll try to explain a book, I'll feel like, you know, there should be congressional hearings or something. I should have a lawyer whispering in my ear. On the advice of counsel, I can't answer that, because it's almost impossible to defend the choices you make. I found myself inventing this actress, and she was in Italy in 1962, and I thought, what's she doing in Italy in 1962? And that leads me to research Cleopatra, the film that was being made there. And but I think, you know, I always was trying to find characters that who were striving in certain ways. And, you know, one thing would lead to another. One bit of research would lead to the next. I think one of the reasons the book took so long was weaving all those stories together. I always thought of it as a sort of braided story, these strands coming in and out, but hopefully forming a whole, and that whole being a kind of, you know, a story that about not just the people in their lives, but about a kind of thematic connection that they all have too.
There is one of the characters in Beautiful Ruins, Alvis Bender, who has been coming to this little seaside village in Italy for years to write, but he has only ever written a single chapter of this would-be masterpiece in his mind.
Yeah.
Was there a point at which that was – Beautiful Ruins was that book in your mind?
Yeah, that's an illustration of kind of how the book worked for me, exactly. I was stuck with one chapter, just as Alvis Bender is stuck with one chapter. I had two problems, really. I had in my mind the idea that this villa, that this hotel should be called the Hotel Adequate View, which struck me as funny but also sort of wistful, and I'm a pretty wistful writer. So the other problem was that I was stuck with one chapter, a woman checking into the Hotel Adequate View in a village I'd made up in Italy. And if you know anything about Italians, you know that understatement is not a hallmark of especially Italian males. So trying to figure out how this innkeeper had named his hotel the Hotel Adequate View, I realized I needed an American. And so being stuck on one chapter, I sent an American with the problem I'd had, which was that he was Alvis Bender, a former Wisconsin car salesman and English teacher who, which sometimes feels like the cross of a novelist is half car salesman, half English teacher. So, I sent Alvis Bender to solve my narrative problems. And along the way, I was in Scotland for the Edinburgh Fringe and Book Festival and found myself contemplating questions of beauty and art that, that the character Pat later contemplate. So in a way, because the book took those 15 years, I very much found myself incorporating my own writing life into it.
As it existed as a single chapter for so long, how did you come to the conclusion that it was a novel and not a short story?
Well, every time I would return to it, I would tear it down from the beginning. There isn't a sentence that existed as it did then. But as with most people, I think for a fiction writer, the elemental thing, the thing at the very beginning is character. And these people, Dee and Pasquale, especially Pasquale, who was lived in this small provincial town and dreamed of turning a small fishing village into a resort teeming with Americans and Canadians and Marilyn Monroe on his beach, and him dumping loads of construction sand and having the waves take them away and imagining he could build a tennis court in the cliffs until Dee points out to him that the tennis balls will be bobbing in the ocean if people miss them. And that sort of dreamer, that unlikely dreamer, I connected with, again, coming from Spokane, Washington. I still live in the town I was born in. And so Pasquale, someone who believes life is going to pass him over, was a character that I just couldn't let go of. And so every time I finished five other novels in those 15 years, and every time I finished one, I would say, all right, what other arrows do I have in the quiver? And I would always find myself returning to a book that was called at various times The Hotel Adequate View and all sorts of things before it became Beautiful Ruins.
There is this wonderful passage delivered mainly by the somewhat inebriated Alvis Bender as he's kind of lecturing Pasquale about what writers do, and I was hoping you might share it with us.
Sure. Pasquale didn't understand what Alvis Bender meant by these writers inventing. He thought of inventors as men like Marconi, the great Bolognese who'd invented the wireless. Once the first story was told, what was there to invent? Excellent question. Since losing his college teaching job, Alvis was always looking for opportunities to lecture, and in the sheltered teenage Pasquale, he found a willing audience. Imagine truth is a chain of great mountains, many surfaces and peaks, valleys, their tops way up in the clouds. Writers explore these truths, always looking out for new paths up these peaks. So the stories are paths, Pasquale asked. No, Alvis said, stories are bulls. Riders come of age full of vigor, and they feel the need to drive the old stories from the herd. One bull rules the herd for a while, but then he loses his vigor and the young bulls take over. Stories are bulls. Nope. Alvis Bender took a drink. Stories are nations, empires. They can last as long as ancient Rome or as short as the Third Reich. Story nations rise and decline, governments change, trends rise, and they go on conquering their neighbors. Like the Roman Empire, the epic poem stretched for centuries as far as the world. The novel rose with the British Empire. But wait, what is that rising in America? Film? Pasquale grinned. And if I ask if stories are empires, you'll say, stories are people. I'm a story. You're a story. Your father is a story. Our stories go in every direction. They die out, crash, bump into one another. But sometimes, if we're lucky, our stories join into one, and for a while we're less alone. But you never answered the question, Pasquale said, why you come here. Bender pondered the wine in his hand. A writer needs four things to achieve greatness, Pasquale. Desire, disappointment, and the sea. That's only three. Alvis finished his wine. You have to do disappointment twice.
Jess Walter reading from Beautiful Ruins. Thanks. Did you spend time in Italy as this came together?
Yeah. My wife is second generation Italian. So I went the first time in 1997 and we ventured up and down the boot. And then we staggered into the Cinque Terre in the middle of the off season when it was pouring rain and when there were no other tourists around. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to write about it in the 1960s. And so I started the novel in 97. I went back a couple of times. My Italian publisher dragged me to Italy one time. So I snuck back to the Cinque Terre and did some more research. And then I finished a draft in about 2008, but it wasn't right. I didn't have the book. So I went back to Italy and found myself back at the Cinque Terre, really immersing myself and trying to find my way back into the story.
You were comparing Porto Vergogna, which Port of Shame, to Spokane, which is obviously a much larger metropolitan area. Did it surprise you, the commonality you felt?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a way to write about characters to find a kind of emotional purchase, something that you connect with that isn't exactly the same but is similar. Someone asked Marilyn Robinson, the great novelist, one time which of her characters she identified with. And she said, oh, my goodness, all of them. And so Pasquale is a much more drastic version of the sort of isolation that I felt living in my hometown, but a very similar isolation. The same way Dee Murray's ambition and her fear that she's missed the boat was something I could connect with. Alvis Bender's creative crisis is something I've felt a million times. Pat Bender's you know, trying to tame his demons is something anyone can identify with. So I usually can find some peace, even though it can be more exaggerated in the characters.
So I won't bother asking you which of your characters you can identify
with.
Yeah.
I mean, you find a bit of them that you can find some place with. But then they surprise you there. I'm always surprised who they turn out to be. And that's the great fun of it. I don't think it's that different describing writing. Anyone who loves books understands what it is to be a writer, which is to be so swept away by the story that you have what a fiction writer calls surprising inevitability, where you didn't expect something to happen, but it seemed like it had to happen that way. And I don't know how many times I'll be writing and a character will seem to have that surprising inevitability, something that I didn't even really see coming.
Well, and I wonder if this many years into your writing career, you are better at disguising your own or hiding your own commonalities with your characters than perhaps when you started?
I don't know. You know, I have I have this short story collection out now, some of those stories are seem nakedly autobiographical. I always feel like the more the character resembles me in the exterior, sometimes the less they do in the interior. I wrote about a mafia member in the witness protection program named Vince Camden in my novel Citizen Vince, who in some ways feels like the most nakedly autobiographical character I've ever written about, even though I've never killed anyone or been involved in the mob. But some of the thoughts that he had were so close to the things that I've thought. And so, sometimes I'll be surprised and, you know, by things that'll bubble up within the characters, surprised in both ways, that they connect so much to something I've felt and that they seem so alien to me and yet in a way that I can understand. And I think more and more, and you asked about my age as a writer, I've come to think of writing and reading as an act of empathy, of being able to crawl inside someone else's skin. And we can do that both by recognizing ourselves in them and by recognizing them in the way they don't resemble us too.
Well, it's terrific stuff. Jess Walter, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jess Walter's latest novel is called Beautiful Ruins. It's just out in paperback. He also has a recent short story collection called We Live in Water. Walter lives in Spokane, Washington. He was in Milwaukee last week for a reading at Boswell Book Company. That is the Tuesday edition of Lake Effect. Tomorrow on the show, we'll meet the woman in charge of a huge swath of the nation's forests, the regional forester for Region 9 of the U.S. Forest Service. That includes the Midwest and the whole northeastern part of the country, and it's headquartered here in Milwaukee. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I sure hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.